Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on WebTalkRadio.com. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. You know my guest and I are excited to have you with us today. Now, as you listen to the show, listen, we get it, man. That word change, right, throws us into a tailspin at times, especially if the change is thrust upon us and not chosen by us, which we're going to talk about today. However, in the show notes, you'll find my free gift to you, which is my communication style assessment. I believe that anytime change happens, we really have to get kind of locked and loaded and calm with our communication skills. So in the show notes, you'll see that link. You'll get two reports after taking the little quiz. First one, just spotlight your natural communication superpowers. Should know that, lean into that, kind of build from that perspective of strength. Flip side, your lowest score, typically a blind spot. So make sure you read that report, because I think that might even be more useful information than kind of our natural superpowers. Again, that link is in the show notes, my gift to you. Now, to set the stage for the conversation with my guest and I today, I chose a quote by Akrik Brost. I'm sure I said that incorrectly, but Mr. Brost says, "Decide which direction you are going in and take action. One decision at a time, one moment at a time." Now, I really contemplated and chose this quote today on purpose because, you know, you've heard me at the end of every podcast episode, I say that learning and information is a beautiful thing. Doing nothing with it, it's just simply information. So that component of taking action, I believe every day, we have to take action every day, but I believe that's how we create the magic and responses and just good stuff that finds us in our life. Now, it's not uncommon to hear of people who strongly desire to change their life, seek the knowledge, and then they just do nothing with that information that they've learned. Now, I know I'm an action taker by nature. So are you taking action to create the change that you're seeking in your life? Well, today, of course, I'm going to discuss this with my amazing guest, David Neagle. David, Why We Sabotage the Change We're Seeking, so that we can be aware of how it happens. And hopefully it's going to help us help keep us all moving forward. So are you curious about this idea of the self-sabotage, turning the tables and being able to take action? Well, I hope you are, because David is my resident expert. David is a speaker, best-selling author, founder of the multi-million dollar global consulting company, Life Is Now, Inc., and hosts the Business Daily News ranked podcast, The Successful Mind. Make sure you tune into that. Now, being in the personal and professional development industry for over 20 years, you know, David's helped tens of thousands of students from across the globe to gain confidence and find the right mindset needed to increase their revenue, turning their endeavors into 7- and 8-figure ventures. Please help me welcome David back to the show for our second time. So, David, thanks for being on again and sharing your zone of genius with my peeps.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always good. The last conversation, and just everybody, FYI, I'm going to put the show note, the show link from our previous episode back in December of 2023, for those of us that are listening in the future. David and I gave some good foundational information about the topic, and now we're kind of leveling up. So I do recommend listening to that podcast as well. So first question for this episode, David, where does self-sabotage come from?
Well, it comes from two places, really. One of them is that in the first early years of our life, our mind is programmed with only survival as far as the number one thing that we're doing. So the subconscious mind's based on pattern recognition. So it develops survival patterns right in the first years of life. And it really continues forever unless we actually go in and change them. So when we think about sabotage, if we take the idea of the judgment of that away, really, your subconscious mind is just basically doing this. You're changing. We don't understand the change. So we want you to continue along this same path because we know that that's safe. It's not something that is being done like to, with the intention of hurting you or holding you back. The other part of that is that most people are raised with the societal lens of being a victim. They're not raised with the idea that they're a creator in this world and that they have the power to create, so they don't see the world that way. And when you don't learn how to see the world that way, you get stuck in the old Cartman triangle, right? The dreaded drama triangle, so to speak. You have the victim, the persecutor, and the rescuer, and then you see everything through that lens. So what ends up happening is that a person decides they want to do something different, but they don't know how to see the opportunities that will get them there because they can only see through that lens. And then immediately they find themselves in being a victim of either themselves or a circumstance or their environment or other people or problems in their life. They immediately switch into the patterns of behavior that they've learned from being a victim. And before you know it, they're right back where they started. And if they don't even, then they don't even know that they're viewing the world that way. So part of it is to understand how our subconscious mind works. The second part is to understand how you've been trained to view the world. And I'd like to add this, especially right now in this time that we live, we are celebrating victims galore around the world. It's like we're holding them up in high esteem for whatever reason. So people are actually being encouraged to be victim. It's like a badge of honor if you're a victim these days. And the damage that it's doing to especially our young people is absolutely extraordinary because they never know that there's another way to see the world. So they don't even think they have options.
Give me an example of that victim that you're saying we're paying homage to, that victim mentality. Can you give me a tangible example in the news or what, you know, whatever that you experience or that you've seen?
Yeah, well, there's many. So it's anytime you're looking at, say, the news, for instance, which is always telling people they are where they are because of something else. So very often the middle class and the poorer classes of the world are, the news tells you you're stuck there because the rich people are keeping you there. And it's number one, it's not true. The rich people are not keeping a person there. But what happens is that when you're told that, you think your way out is to fight the rich people, right? To change the taxes, to change the laws, to change all of these different things. Now, I know this because I was one of the poor people. I was bankrupt. We were on food stamps. I had no education. And I found my way out of that really fast only because I came across the learning responsibility. So I figured out how to see outside of that triangle really quick. Yeah. But people do it based on economic problems. They do it based on race issues. They do it based on gender issues. They do it based on the states or the governments in the country of the governments, whichever a person lives. So you have different ways of viewing things, but it's almost as if there's two sides of people both producing the same problem and people don't, like, if you look at, like, in the United States, we have like the Republicans and the Democrats. They both agree that the problem is the problem, but it's not the problem. So people get focused on, they're the experts. This must be what the problem is. Should I do it the way the Republicans say it to break out or the way the Democrats say to break out? And they don't know that there's another option to break out. They don't need to do any of the stuff that's being told, and they don't need to be stuck by those ideologies either.
And so, okay, I'm curious because I always approach things from a curious perspective, right? That's kind of how my brain is wired. I have never had a victim mentality. I could say that with clarity. Bad things have happened to me, just like everybody else. Tragedy has hit my family, myself, right? Multiple times. But I have a process that internally or mentally that I go through where I allow myself literally 24 hours, depending on the severity of the situation, but on average, let's say it's 24 hours where I feel sorry for myself. I feel like a victim. The world hates me. Woe's me. I give myself 24 hours and I go, okay, enough now. You can't control what you can't control. Let's explore what you can control. And now what can you do or what can't you do based on that very logical perspective. So I understand the emotion. I'm not saying I'm an emotionalist, horrible person. I understand the emotion. I feel that victim. I'm going to use that word. I don't know if I'm using that correctly with the context of our conversation today. Sure. But I only allow myself 24 hours to go down that rabbit hole of self-pity. And then it's like, you know, stop the music because it's my life. I'm in control, right? Nobody's really telling me what to do. Right. So why now, do I know people with a victim mentality? Of course I do, right? The woe is me. They don't want to change. They just want to complain. They want to stay in their story, all those things. And we all know people like that. Why do I not have a victim mentality? Yet some people in my family do. So is it how we're raised? Is it other influences? I'm just so curious because people in my family have a victim mentality and yet I don't. Why?
Mine too. I think the only thing that I've ever been able to, so I was raised the same way many people in my family are raised. And all the people in my family have different levels of the way that they view the world through that victim lens.
Yes.
For me, what ended up, so I was curious as a kid. I was very curious. I felt like there was something wrong with the world and I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So I carried that curiosity all the way into when I started having real problems as an early adult. And I went bankrupt and we were married and had kids and it was just a total disaster. But I got to the point where it was like, I've got to find a way out of this. But what I didn't know was that I was approaching it from this victim mentality. Like if you had even said the words to me back then, I wouldn't have even understood what you were talking about. So one night I had a really bad experience and a voice in my head said, David, change your attitude. And I began working with that idea and I changed three things. And I think I mentioned this on the last time you interviewed me, right? I started acting like I love what I do, doing everything to the best of my ability, treating people with respect. Inadvertently, when I did that, I moved myself out of the victim focus. I didn't know that. If you'd have told me that, I wouldn't have understood what you were saying. But the moment that I did that, I started seeing opportunities over problems because victims are focused on problems. And I just for your listeners, I say this with all the respect in the world. I'm not being critical or in any way trying to put anybody down. When I say that, what happens with a victim is that they think the power is in the problem and not in themselves. And the power is always in ourselves. But if you grow up in an environment where they tell you that the power is in the problem, you don't know you have the power because even as a little kid, you're not demonstrating how to use that in your life. So you become stuck just on that psychology alone.
Yeah. And you know, maybe I'm stubborn and maybe I'm stupid. I don't know. But even as a child, I think I drove my parents crazy, David, because it was always, well, why are you doing it that way? Why are you telling me I can't? Give me a reason. That doesn't make sense to me. I'm not going to go out and get hurt. You told me this, I'm doing that. What's the big deal? So I was constantly, and I wasn't trying to be defiant or contrary or just to be a bad kid. That was never, ever my intent. It was just, but why? But tell me why.
Right. It didn't make sense. You either.
It didn't make sense to me. So interesting. So it could be to some extent how our brain is wired naturally. And then you have the overlay of your priest or your mom or your dad or who's ever teaching you. It can become even more embedded and or create that logic or that victim approach.
Right.
So again, we're human, right? So there's a lot going on right in this brain of ours. We have to be able to address it. So here's now, let's shift to business for a second, unless you wanted to add anything else.
No, that was beautiful.
Okay,
go ahead.
So great. Thank you for answering that question. And again, I wasn't a bad kid. Just curious. I love that word, curious. So now let's shift to business. How does a business owner's this self-concept, you know, a victim or whatever, impact the decision-making process, you know, their business strategies, or maybe even their whole entrepreneurial journey, right? Because we're courageous to start a business. Does this victim play into that and the level of success maybe we have?
It does for a lot of people. And the reason for it is that if a person has been going through their life, even with a little bit of victim mentality, when they start to get into a business, the question becomes, how are they psychologically approaching their business? Now, one of the things that we've all been kind of brainwashed with is that success has to be very hard, or that you have to be special, or you have to be uber intelligent, or you have to have a lot of money, or on and on and on. So, an amazing talent or know people or whatever it is that it might be. And none of that stuff is true at all. So the number I believe, and it has been my experience in my own life and for 25 years of coaching people, the number one skill a business person has to learn is sales. And it's one of the things that we hear very early in life that has a real mixed metaphorical message around it, like salespeople are slimy and they're con people and you can't trust them. You know, the sleazy sales, used car sales guy, all that kind of stuff. And we have a mixed message around money. Money is good until you either make too much or you have too much debt or, you know, whatever. So it's like you have to have money to survive, but there's also all the evil connotations around money, which are also not true. However, if you take the idea that success is hard, that you're not even sure if money is good or bad, you're not sure if sales is good or bad, and then you go out there and try to be successful, I guarantee you, you're going to make it more difficult than it is, right? I mean, there's already a level of difficulty because you're changing your mind. I mean, the value base of an entrepreneur is totally different than a middle class person. Now, that's not right or wrong. It's just different because people want different outcomes. That's the way that it is. Right. But if you're approaching it from it's hard, my experience is that you will make it hard. If you think making a lot of money is hard, you will continue to make it hard. When the truth is, success is actually easy. Making a lot of money is actually easy, but you have to approach it from a different mindset in order to have that experience. We grew up in a time in history where working very hard is an ethic and a badge of honor. Now, I'm not against hard work, but what I found by accident actually was that when a person is working, even if it's simple, they will make it hard because the idea of it being hard is attached to their ideology, their self-image as a person. See, I worked really hard. I struggled. I suffered. Therefore, I'm worthy of success. I had a real kind of, this is an amazing thing that happened to me. Number one, when I realized I was working on changing my income from $50,000 a year to $50,000 a month, it took me 3 months to do it. I did it in the third month and made no progress in the first 2 months. And what allowed me to do this in the third month was that I realized I was making it hard. In other words, every way that I was looking at doing it, I was coming from the place that this is really hard. So my mentor pointed this out to me at the time. And I thought, how can I make this easy? I found the easiest way to do it. And I hit the 50,000 in 2 weeks. Okay, great experience. That blew my mind open. Like then I went to a million and over really easy. But as I was working with clients, almost every one of them, when they would get to the $1 million mark and have success, they would all say to me privately, I feel guilty. I feel like I've done something wrong. And I'm like, why? They go, because you were right. It's easy. And it seems like it's not supposed to be easy. And it's triggering something in me to make me feel like I'm doing something wrong. Huh. And I experienced the same thing. And what I realized was that because we've heard that it's not supposed to be easy and that it is hard and that everybody, you're a good person if you're a hard worker. When we make a lot of money, it's easy, especially when we saw mom and dad struggle and all this other stuff. It makes us feel like we've done something wrong. And that alone is a sabotage process in a person's life. I've seen people literally just flip back over and destroy everything after doing that because they feel so guilt-ridden about their own success.
Wow. And I totally get that, though. I totally get that perspective. And it's funny, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, my parents used to say, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. We can't afford that. You know, your father works hard. We don't have money for those extras. And my parents are love. My mom passed, but my dad is still alive. They're lovely, wonderful people. They clearly did a good job. I think I'm a good human. But all of these subconscious things play out in my business. Like I had to come to terms with a lot of that kind of underlying vibe that you have to work hard. If you're not working hard, you're not doing it right. How dare you think you can make money without working hard? Put that nose to the grindstone and don't look up until you're done. And oh, your fingers are bleeding. They're not bleeding enough. It's that mentality. And the other thing I hear a lot too with just society in general, if we're not working hard and hustling, right? We're called the hustle culture now, especially in the United States. That, you know, you have no business getting promoted or you have no business making a lot of money in like you have no business. Like we're being judged because we don't have to work as hard, you know, and I know as I'm aging, And I attribute it. There's wisdom as we age and all these things, David. Okay, great. But I'm telling you, I'm working less now than I ever have, and I'm making more money than I ever have. So I think there's a couple of pieces of the puzzle, right? I have a good reputation. I show up, I overdeliver, all those things. So I'm proving myself, but my mind has shifted from that hustle mentality of, what do you mean you didn't put in 10 hours a day, you lazy loaf? Right. Yeah, I don't do that to myself anymore. Sometimes at the end of the day, I think, wow, I am mentally fatigued. Let me walk away. I'll start tomorrow with a fresher perspective. And it's the smartest thing I could do, going for a walk or sitting in nature or going, I do my Pilates. All of those things, those little pattern interrupts, has now calmed me so I could do more and work less and make more money. It's counterintuitive, and yet the stuff works. What you're saying works. So I'm loving our conversation.
You know, another crazy thing about this is we're raised in an environment where we believe competition in business is a good thing. Mm. And competition was never supposed to be in business. Competition came about at like the best of the best, right? It's a game. It was not supposed to be in business. Let's think about this, right? Let's look at just the United States, right? It's supposed to be the land of the free, the home of the brave. People can live the American dream, but the way to do it is you have to crush your competitor to do it. Mm. And we say, yet everybody can succeed. Well, how the hell can everybody succeed if I have to crush my competitor to do it? And where is that in the ethic of more life to everyone? You know, if we actually came together as a people and worked in harmony with each other, everybody could be successful that wanted to be without having to crush somebody else to be able to do it. You know, so they say, well, competition makes people better and it makes it forges innovation and all of that. And I think that there is a little truth to that, but I think desire and passion forge way more than competition, because the idea of having to beat somebody to get better, if you really stop and think about it, there's something flawed with that. Some of the greatest people that I know that are in business, including myself, do not compete with anybody. We just follow our own heart and what we believe God is showing us how to do, and we succeed, and we never pay attention to what other coaches are doing. Just do your own thing.
It's interesting. Somebody recently, I'm working with someone on my SEO, you know, for my website, and always trying to learn, right? And make sure that I stay relevant. Those are the things, right? And technology is just not my strength. So I reach out to people to try to educate me and help me. And it was funny. She said, well, who's your competition? David, I swear to God, I go, well, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? I go, well, there's other vendors out there. And I said, you know, I know who they are. I said, but can I tell you I like their website or don't like their website? No, because their target market is probably different than mine. And I don't really care what they're doing. I know what I need to do because I know how to help people with their sales objectives, right? And do it from a loving, caring place, not from this dog eat dog, what you just described. And she goes, like, she was stunned that I couldn't rattle off like five of my competitors. I said, I know who they are, but like, I don't pay attention to them. I don't need to pay attention to them. It's funny that you say that. And I thought, and now I'll share with you, right? That's the self-doubt comes in, right? That negative record player, David. Yeah. And I thought, oh, maybe I should be paying attention to my competitors. So thank you for saying no, Connie. You don't have to look at what your competitors are doing. Me. I'm doing me. I only know how to do me, David. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I pay no attention, and I haven't. And I thank God my mentor taught me that very early on. I'm like, aren't you concerned? This was back in the 90s. I'm like, aren't you concerned about this person or that person? He's like, I don't even know what they're doing, nor do I care. I'm just doing what I want to do, you know? Exactly. And I just believed that along with the other things he was teaching me. And I've never had an issue with a competitor.
And I think it almost what you just said was so important. He's like, I don't know, I'm doing me, right? But I think what we do is we have our zone of genius, right? Mine is sales and that whole building relationship, right? That's just what I'm good at. But it's funny because I think then if I look at what they're doing, I'm like, oh, I don't do that. That's a good idea. But it's not part of my soul. I shouldn't be doing what they're doing.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. That makes sense, right?
People will copy your stuff all the time, and then it fails for them because it's not part of their soul, right? They're looking for a shortcut where they don't have to, you know, be a creator themselves. Yeah. It's like, just do you and you'll be great. You don't need to take other people's stuff.
Yeah. And it's so funny, too. Now, all these things are coming to my head as you're saying this. I hope this is helping everybody listening. You know, I have my curriculum and stuff. I give my manuals and I give a lot of content because my philosophy with business is if you're listening and then sitting and taking copious notes, because I'm a note taker. So I know people do that. Yeah. You're not listening to everything because you're taking notes. And the next thing I said, you missed. So I just put in manual. I go, here's the thing. Now you can jot an idea or an example on the side of the page, right? If you want, or in your notebook, but pay attention to me. It's all in the notes. I'm giving it to you. And people say to me, oh, aren't you afraid people are going to steal your stuff? And David, every time I go, I don't care. I said, because they can't deliver what I created this. I know what I'm saying behind it. They can't explain it the way I can. They want to take my manual and read from it. Go for it. It's not going to, you can't lift it off the page. I'm lifting it off the page by now giving you tangible examples about what I just showed you. So it's the same thing, right? That mentality of they might steal your stuff. I don't care.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Craziness. It's we worry about the wrong stuff. And that's what I think is part of what gets us stuck. My next question, in our last interview, we touched on a bunch of the common blind spots that trap business owners. And for someone that may have some blind spots around this self-sabotage, can you show us how does it show up in business and keep us from changing? And are there specific examples maybe that business owners can say, oh, I'm doing that? Like you said, that competition, the dog eat dog. Is there anything else that we should like that are common when you're coaching that you're like, yeah, there's a ton of them, Con. Can you give us a couple of more?
Yeah, well, so the one that you just mentioned, by the way, is actually a blind spot, a person taking other people's information. The blind spot is that they don't think that they're good enough for their own. So that is a low self-esteem blind spot. It's the same thing with when they pick a goal for themselves. The reason most people don't hit magnificent goals is because they don't actually admit that they want something magnificent. So they pick what they think they can do. And there's no inspiration around that. There's no desire around that. So the blind spot is most people are actually, they say they have big dreams, but they're actually working for safety. So they stay at the line of struggle all the time. Another blind spot is, significantly around money, is that they want other people to pay them a lot of money to do something, but they're not willing to pay others a lot of money. In other words, they go through life on the cheap. They're cutting out coupons. They're looking for sales. They're constantly afraid of debt. They don't change their own behavior, and they don't realize why it doesn't change from the business side. You cannot expect other people to pay significant amounts of money to you for what you do when you have a blind spot yourself around how you're actually spending money in your own life. Now, what is going on there? They have no faith. They don't understand the laws of the universe. They don't understand how the world works. And they're believing. So the way most people are taught about money is that they're taught about money in grade school, high school, in college, but they're taught how to manage it based on a fixed income. They're not taught how to manage it based on there's an abundance in the world and you can earn whatever it is that you want. So when I say this with very much respect to people that live on a fixed income, that unless you start to understand how to earn your own money, then you have to play by those old rules. But those old rules will not allow you to break out. Okay. So when you want to break out, the first thing that you have to do is stop playing by the rules that people taught you that keep you stuck, because those are the rules that keep the masses stuck, right? If you have to know how everything is going to happen before you make a decision, you're never going to make a big enough decision to give you any kind of quantum leap in what you're doing so that it changes your belief system and you really can go after what it is that you want. Our greatest power is our ability to choose. God does the rest. You make the choice, everything else starts to show up, but it has to be the right choice. It can't come from fear. It can't come from desperation. It needs to come from the inspiration of what God or spirit of the universe put in your heart as an individual for what you want for your life.
Yeah.
And the idea is the hardest question anybody will ever ask themselves or of another person is, what do you really want? And most people can't even answer it because they weren't raised with the idea that they can have what they really want. So the number one key for a person to open up the door and start to get out into the truth of their life is to start giving themselves permission to want what they want. Yeah. Right. And allow themselves to have it. Because if you don't do that, you will never open up that big purpose that's in your own, that's in your heart. That's in everybody's heart. Right. Every human being has a purpose, but they don't know how to unlock it because we were taught to play it safe. And that keeps the door locked. It doesn't open it.
And the irony with this, too, is those that are chasing the dollar. I had this thought this morning, so it's just funny that we're talking about this, David, today, right? Divine download, obviously, while I was getting ready, you know, for my day. And I thought, wow, so many people are chasing the dollar. Recently, someone made a comment to me that I do what I do for the money. And I was taken back because I said, well, you don't know me at all for you to even make that comment. I do what I do because I love what I do. I'm passionate about it. When I see light bulbs go off, like it fills my soul with such joy and I get paid to do this, like yippee-ki-yay, sign me up every day, right? This is where I come from. And so this morning I was reflecting on that recent comment and I thought it's sad. I think people are chasing money. And once you start doing that, you've just closed yourself off to opportunities because you're discounting something that maybe will fill your soul, your life with joy, and you're, well, I can't make money on it, so forget it. Instead of saying, well, maybe I could do that as a hobby, and then maybe that hobby could become a business, a very lucrative business. I mean, I don't know. But when we chase the money, we're really, really stifling our brilliance because we're looking at the dollars instead of what am I good at? What can I bring to the world and get paid for, right? Because we have bills. I understand right. that. But it's got to fill you with joy to some extent. Otherwise, the masses, I think we're, you said it before, the choice. We choose to stay where we are for the safety of the paycheck. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. But what are we giving up if we're just chasing the money and not filling our soul with what we're here to do? It's sad to me, that's a sad, sad commentary. I get it. I have family members, you know, I'm trying to teach my kids, you know, why forget about the money for a minute. Can you grow your skills and see what you're good at? And then trust me, the money will come, right? But we're taught that it's about chasing the money and that dangerous perspective. I don't know. You want to comment on that before we end the show, but
I mean, I was raised this way where it's not about being happy. You got to do what you're told with no explanation, right? Yep. With the idea, like, what if something goes wrong without any explanation of what it could possibly be? But the idea was that you've got to find, it's not about happy. It's about responsibility. You got to find a job. You got to raise a family. You know, not everybody gets to be happy, blah, that type of thing. Yep. And I think that that's completely backwards.
Yeah,
I think we need to encourage kids to find out what makes them happy. Let them try everything that they want to try. Let them develop some discipline. Let them develop some confidence in themselves and choose what they want. Making money is so easy. The idea that you can't make money at everything is nonsense. I really believe this. I do not think that there's any human being on this planet that has their God-given purpose inside of them that does not also allow them to make the necessary money or resources that they need to live a fully productive life. It would make no sense in nature. It would make no sense spiritually either. So if we're not doing that, there's something wrong. I don't want to know how much money you want to make until you tell me what's going to make you happy. Because if you have to get up every day and make yourself do something that you hate, that's not living.
It's a slow death.
It's a slow death. It is. We kill ourselves.
Yeah. And, you know, you see it, the stress. They say stress is the number one killer. And I remember coming up through the ranks because here's the deal. Life is stressful, right? You know, I was running a business. My kids were young. I'm sure the same thing with you, trying to juggle everybody's schedule. Who's sick? Who's going to babysit my mom and dad? It's moving parts, right? It's stressful. Yeah. Life is stressful. And I remember the doctor said to me one day, we have to eliminate stress. I said, do I get rid of my kids? What do you mean? Get rid of stress. So I understood what the doctor was trying to say. Sometimes life is just stressful, but now here's my take on it. At least I loved what I was doing. So it wasn't drudgery of my job and I was making the money to pay the bills, but life is stressful. Like freaking deal with it. I don't write to me in my head. I'm like, deal with it. That's what today is bringing. Figure it out. But if I hated my job on top of it, why get out of bed? And that I understand the depression and everything people are facing. I am so empathetic to that, David, because we're taught to live this way and to have that hopelessness instead of hopefulness. And I think that's a big decision. And the last thing I just wanted to say, because you mentioned choice several times. When people say to me, well, I have no choice. I have a mortgage. I have to stay here. Meanwhile, their manager is so punitive and wrong, and they're bad leaders, right? But right. I have to stay. And I say, you don't have to. I'm not saying leave your job and not have a paycheck. But if I were you, I'd be taking control of my life. I'd be looking for another job. No one has to tolerate that. But you think I get a paycheck, so it's okay for me to tolerate that. So we have a choice. Sometimes the choice is doing nothing, but be clear, you've made a choice, right?
Yeah, to do nothing. Right. Yeah. I would actually tell them to quit. I would, because if they had enough awareness to ask the question or identify that as an issue, they're never going to realize that an opportunity will show up. It will always be the excuse not to move forward.
Yeah.
And true, it's a terrifying idea but that terror should show you just how linked in your mind safety is to that paycheck. And that's a prison for people. It's an absolute prison,
yeah.
Right?
And
just
know,
you'll
and
figure
we,
it out.
Yeah, and we know there's a better way, David. So
there's
here's
a better way.
The deal, all right? Clearly, they need to keep tuning into my show because I have amazing guests
they
like
do.
You. But they need to tune in to your podcast as well, because it's called The Successful Minds. Please check it out and subscribe, because this is the kind of insight, tips and ideas. So you get to know David. And then if you want to hire him down the road, cool. But if not, at least make the choice. See, again, information's a beautiful thing. It's what we started with at the top of the hour, David. Information's a beautiful thing. If you do nothing with it, it's simply information. Here's a good action step. All the things David shared with us today, go back, listen to the show again, write some down, try them, right? Start to experiment with yourself. Worst, if you only want to take the action of listening to David's show, listen to David's show. That's still a good action step where you're choosing your own life to move forward. And I think that's the inspiration within today's show, David, that you and I hope it's to take that little piece of action. And it could be as simple as tuning into your show. Here's the deal. I want to give your website and contact info as well. David's website is lifeisnowinc.com. I will put it in the show notes. If you have a question that after reviewing maybe the podcast or after reviewing David's website and you think, I have a couple of questions, email him. It's support@davidneagle.com. Again, I will put that in the show notes. Podcast called The Successful Mind. It will be in the show notes. And the last thing that will be in the show notes is our previous. I hope you want more. I hope that you're craving more. David gave some beautiful insight in our first show. And I will put that from December 2023. I'll put that in the show notes as well. David, anything else before we sign off? You are a delight to hang out with and you get me charged up and inspired. I'm excited now.
Now, thanks for having me. You're a great interviewer for sure. And your stuff is amazing. So the only thing that I would leave people with is, look, your life is not getting longer. It's getting shorter. The time to do something is now. If you would not be listening to Connie if you did not have something else that you wanted to do, make the decision and just decide that you're going to follow a different path in life. It's too short to mess around with.
Yeah, we have one shot, man. Make it good, make it great, and have a lot of fun along the way.
Absolutely.
And here's the thing, too. If we get to share that joy, how beautiful are we contributing to the earth, to the world, right? And to others.
Absolutely.
And having that inspirational impact. That's pretty powerful stuff. So, David, as always, just a pleasure hanging with you, and your insight is brilliant. And again, you're the rags from riches, right? Cause you were in that bankruptcy, having that feeling, that pressure of being the dad. And now look at you, showing people, right, how to really create these dynamic, beautiful lives. So thank you so much for what you do, as well. And I'm truly honored every time you're on my show. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Connie.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Always welcome. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover, no matter where you are with change in your life and you fill in the blank, you know what's going on or what you need change in. I hope my guests and I provide the inspiration, tools, strategies, ideas, tips, anything for you to move your needle one little step. That's all we're asking you to do. Trust me, with that action comes beautiful reaction, and that's where we create the magic in our lives. Thanks again, David. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.com. I am inspired when I see my analytics and I see my show numbers going up. You make me so happy, I can't tell you. And it means that my message and my guest message that's landing for you. So you inspire me weekly. I love you all. I will see you next week. Have a great week. Again, filled with inspiration, make one choice to do one thing new, and magic happens. Take care, everybody, and I'll see you next week. Have a great one.